Now, I'd like to call your attention to an experience that Moses had. Well, the Lord told Moses, somehow, I don't know, to lead his people out of Egypt. And he said in Exodus 4:15, I'll be with your mouth. And with Aaron's mouth. And I'll teach you what you shall do. And I've asked the Lord to do that for me. And the Lord's sure done some dumb things. Either that, or I didn't pay any attention, but imagine the Lord being with your mouth. And really, it comes right down to that, doesn't it? Let me share a couple of Bible verses with you. Proverbs 16:3, commit your works unto the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. Have you got enough faith to trust your mind? Or take another one in Psalm 37, I think it's 4 or 5. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you the desire of your heart. And the best thing that I know how to do is to do what occurs to me to do. What am I supposed to say to you? I'm going to say to you what I decide, what I judge I ought to say to you. That's the best I can do. That's the best you can do. And the Lord said to Moses, I'll be with your mouth. And I've thought so often, isn't that a wonderful thing for us to commit our mouths to the Lord? And I've been amazed how what comes out of this mouth can move you. You know, he went to the people and told them that the Lord would lead them out of Egypt. And after all, the people were oppressed. And they had to labor hard, didn't they? And in Exodus 6:9, Moses spake so to the children of Israel, God told me that he would lead us out of this problem. I want to point out to you that there was a 40-year process involved here. A lot of us, we want to eliminate everything today. 40-year process. Moses spake so to the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage. Have you ever noticed that when you are anguished of spirit, that you don't think very straight? And when it comes to anguish of spirit, and you're oppressed, and you're misunderstood, and you're mistreated, it's a very difficult thing to think straight. And the children of Israel had a hard time accepting what Moses had to say. But finally they took off. And Moses led the people to the edge of the Red Sea. Now that's a dumb thing to do. Anybody can see. With Pharaoh behind you, what kind of a leader is it that would lead you to the edge of the sea? I mean, just common ordinary reason tells you that that's stupid. And that's one of the strange things about following after the master. It's not simply a matter of common ordinary reason. And to make a decision is not a matter of just accumulating facts. Well, that's what the scientific method says. We even say to you, if you got a decision to make, line up the no's and the yes's. And, you know, I've done that sometimes, haven't you? And all of the evidence says that I should say yes, but I don't want to say yes. What do I care what the evidence says? I don't want to say yes. You see, the scientific method breaks down at that point. And it's not just a matter of accumulating data and accumulating information. That when it comes to leading leadership of the Lord. You know, I've had to make choices in my lifetime where everybody around me agreed that I was wrong. I can remember deciding to go to college. I was an engineer, and I felt that if I began searching the scriptures, and I ran across a Bible verse that troubled me very much. It said, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and the rest of these things will be added." And as I assessed my life, I had it backwards, exactly 180 degrees backwards. And when I evaluated what I was doing with my time, and by the time I got through with my work, and I had a little engineering department on the side, and I took care of my sailboat and sailed it and played tennis and looked after my family and the house, I had run out of week. No more week left. And I decided, well, how about that? Now, if that verse is true, I've got it backwards. And if I'm going to serve the Lord, I better prepare to serve the Lord. After all, I spent 4 years preparing to be an engineer. Maybe I ought to prepare to serve the Lord. And so I decided, we were sitting in our new house one day, and I said to my wife, "What would you think if we sold this place and went to school?" And she laughed. And I laughed. And you know what? 6 months later, we sold a house, and I was off to... I sold everything but my boat. It took me a year to let go of that boat, and one of the saddest days of my life, I still regret seeing that boat go down the street. And you know, when it got around that I was going to school, everybody... My pastor took a special trip to my house to try to straighten me out. There was only one fellow that backed me up, and he was an inexperienced Christian ed director that was in his first year in our church. He said, "Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead." I don't know which one the Lord was talking to. When a pastor comes and says, "The Lord told me to tell you to stay home." And the assistant pastor says, "I believe the Lord's telling you to go." Well, you end up having to make up your own mind. It's amazing. I remember one time I got some poison ivy just before I left on a trip, and it started spreading all over my body, and I went to a skin specialist in Denver, and he painted me from head to foot with gentian violet. I looked like the devil. But he was a skin specialist. And so I came back to my hometown, and I went to another skin specialist, and he looked me over and said, "What happened to you?" I said, "A skin specialist in Denver painted me like this." He said, "That's exactly the opposite of what I would do." So there I am, caught between two skin specialists. Now, you know how difficult that is, don't you? There are so many times when you might as well face it, your choices are going to be your baby. And you may be convinced that you're going to do what you've got to do, and nobody agrees with you. And so Moses spake to the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and because of the cruel bondage. But finally they went, and here they are at the edge of the sea. And when they saw Pharaoh coming, they were afraid. Now, have you ever dealt with anybody that's afraid? Have you ever gotten halfway into a building program and the people began to be afraid? Where's the money coming from? Why did you lead us into this? You see, people don't think straight when they're afraid. But listen to this. Listen to how these people talked. They said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Now that's sarcasm. Why did you deal thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? Now they're really confused, aren't they? I can't see where they were saying, hooray, isn't it wonderful that we've got to toil every day and lay these blocks and lug these stones, isn't it great? It's not what they were saying. They forgot that, you see, because here's Pharaoh coming behind them and there's a sea in front of them and there's no way out. And you've had the experience, I'm sure, of not being able to see a way out, haven't you? Now you're letting us die in the wilderness. That's the nature of human nature. We're prone to be frightened of what we have to do. It's difficult for us to listen to somebody in a leadership position when you don't agree with them. Leadership is a very difficult thing. But anyway, fortunately, we know the end of the story because the sea parted and the way they went and the Pharaoh was destroyed. Now, that ought to convince anybody. And when Israel, this is Exodus 14, 31 to 35, Israel saw the great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and believed Moses. Now they're going to follow him. And that's what they said about Jesus. Jesus, you want us to follow you? Perform a miracle, and then we'll follow you. And what did Jesus say? If you don't believe Moses, you wouldn't believe me. You don't need to go around proving anything about how wonderful God is. And the children of Israel sang this song unto the Lord and spake, saying, I'll sing unto the Lord. He hath triumphed gloriously, and the horse and the rider hath he thrown into the sea. And the Lord is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation, and he is my God, and I will prepare him a habitation, and he is my Father's God, and I will exalt him. You've had that experience, haven't you, where you've gone through a very difficult period in your church and all of a sudden everybody realizes that the pastor is right, bless his heart, aren't you a great guy, and you go home and you're happy. Exodus 15:22, they went 3 days into the wilderness. And they found no water. Have you ever been thirsty? And when you were thirsty, did you find yourself reviewing all of the wonderful things your father did for you? No, all you want to do is find some water. And And they came to Meribah, and they could not drink of the waters of Meribah, for they were bitter. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" 3 days. Moses found them something to drink. That ought to convince them, shouldn't it? Exodus 16, 1 to 3, and the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin. This is the 15th day of the second month after their departure out of the land of Egypt, after two tremendous miracles. And a whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Did you ever have the whole congregation down on you? Do you think that's a new idea? Nobody ever experienced that before? You know, one of my specialties is consulting with ministers. Miserable ministers. I'm not trying to say that all ministers are miserable. I'm trying to say that the ones that end up in the consulting room are. That's not fair to say ministers and missionaries are broken down people because I see them in my office. That's no more fair than for a physician to say that everybody is sick because all I see is sick people. But I've listened to ministers say, after they've shared their burdens and they're so anxious and they're worried and they're mad at some of their deacons, and I say, "You can have peace and you can enjoy it." And they look at me and say, "Have you ever been a minister?" And I say, "No, sir. Yeah, I thought so." How can you understand me if you've never been a minister? I have lots of people say. I've had ladies say to me, "Have you ever had a baby?" Hey, you got me. Yeah, I thought so. Easy enough for you to talk. Did you ever stop to think what kind of training you would need in order to understand everybody? Nobody understands me. I'm the only minister in the church and nobody understands me. How many ministers do you want in the church? No, the price of leadership is to face up to the nature of human nature. Human nature tends to complain. And human nature tends toward fear. And human nature tends to look inward and take their eyes off the Lord. That's just the way it is. And so here we are, 15 days into the second month, into the wilderness. And the children, listen to this, talk about sarcasm. How do you respond when people talk to you like this? The children of Israel said unto them, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots." Have you ever sat in your study and said, "Why did I ever come here? The last place I was at." You know, when we had pizza and they don't like pizza here. If only I could smell some pizza. I'd be happy. I remember going over to Mrs. Jones' house for meals. Nobody here invites me. They said, "Remember when we sat by the flesh pots and we ate bread to the full? And you brought us forth into this wilderness to kill a whole assembly with hunger." Now, that didn't happen. You see, one thing about this story, and whenever you're going to use a case, make sure you know the end from the beginning of the case, you know, because we know how this turned out. And what a miracle, meat coming down from heaven. That didn't convince them. Moses said, now I want to tell you how to handle this meat. And I want to tell you how to handle this manna. And they wouldn't listen to him. It stank and got wormy. That's the nature of human nature. That's the way it is today, isn't it? What do you expect people to act like? Non-people? Well, God said to Moses, again, I don't know how this happened, but he said, come up here, I want to give you some instructions. Imagine our leaders going up to talk to God. Now, that ought to impress you. Wouldn't you think? Exodus 32:1, and the people saw that Moses delayed coming down out of the mountain. And so they gathered themselves unto Aaron. And they said, let's make us a molten calf and build an altar before it. How about that? After all those miracles. But it didn't turn out quite like they wanted to, and the timing was off, you see. Moses just didn't come through. He didn't come down when we thought he should. So let's take matters into our own hands. Our leader isn't performing. It doesn't take much of an excuse to do something if you feel like doing it. You just blame it on the leader. And that's the nature of human nature. And the children of Israel made a golden calf and built an altar in front of it. Moses came down. That's what he found. Now, you know, we're going to talk about setting policy this week. Now, if you want to look at some policies, in Exodus chapter 20 through chapter 31 is a whole bunch of policies. Now, if you get the notion that setting up a bunch of policies solves all your problems, didn't change the Israelites one bit. All it did was determine the basis for judging their performance, that's all. But it didn't change them. Now, you need policy. You need to have guidelines. But guidelines, job descriptions, performance standards don't change human nature. They'll tell you this week the way to get something going is to involve them in a process so that it's theirs. Well, don't be surprised if they don't want to carry out their plan. You're not going to find a way to eliminate personal supervision. You can write anything you want to write. Mind you, now, I do all of these things. We have job descriptions, and if you want to see an example of somebody that follows all these leadership principles, you come into one of my restaurants and I'll show you. The job descriptions are all posted there for everybody to see. We don't even take it for granted that somebody can remember what our dishes should look like. We have a picture, a color picture of every dish. We say that's what it must look like before you serve it. We really go out of our way. And then we have to stand somebody there to say to this cook, look at the dish. Now, believe me, you have to do that. So, these tools that we're going to teach you to use are to be used. They don't transform people. It's not a substitute savior we're giving you. Okay? Then the Lord said, Moses, tell the people, you are a stiff-necked people. There's another side to this, too, though. You see, they had these very elaborate instructions in order to make the tabernacle. And you read in Exodus 39:43, Moses looked upon all the work, and behold, they had done it as the Lord had commanded. Even so had they done it, and Moses blessed them. And I'm sure all of you have had that experience, have you not, where you have accomplished something as a congregation. And you just beam at your congregation, and they beam back. And many of us can remember those kinds of experiences, can't we? That's the nature of human nature. And you surely have these victorious times. And this is one of those wonderful, wonderful times. And can't you just picture these Israelites standing back and looking at this and just delighting in Moses, and Moses delighting in his people, and the fellowship is just wonderful. And we say, let's build some tabernacles and never go away. Let's just keep it this way. I had those moments with my wife when we were just deliciously, delightfully happy and united, and we'd say it's going to stay this way all the time. And then she oversleeps the next morning, and it's all gone. Why didn't you get up? In Leviticus 8:36, it says, so Aaron and his sons did all the things which the Lord had commanded by the hand of Moses. Isn't that great? So you have your moments. Now, what is it that you must do as a leader? You must do what you must do today. And it's the people that will determine. It's their behavior. It's their commitment that will determine what you must do. But it is the nature of human nature to do the thing that you think logical at the moment. It's the nature of human nature to act compulsively and many times very unwisely. Imagine the children of Israel, led by Aaron, making a calf, a golden calf. But that's the way people are. And so you can have all the plans you want and all the guidelines you want and performance standards and evaluations and all of that. And you might even put somebody in charge. Well, let me warn you, you better put somebody in charge of who you put in charge. So when we talk about leadership and we talk about getting things done, and we line up getting things done alongside of being a teacher and being a preacher and being a man of God, you have to recognize, I believe, that if you're going to get much done in your church, you better be thinking about the people in your congregation who will do it, rather than thinking of yourself as the one that's going to do it. So you pick somebody like Aaron. And he builds you a golden calf. And when you come down out of your study and you see your golden calf, that'll sure be a test of your spiritual condition, won't it? And if you even think about putting someone in a leadership position under you, you'd better make sure that you're full of the Spirit. because it's going to require a pretty friendly fellow.